This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. On the programme this morning, how do we make meaning of our life? Do we see ourselves connected to something bigger than us? We'll be exploring some big questions in conversation with my special guest today, Reverend Dr. D.D. Haynes. And from the archives, we're going to Colby Methodist Chapel to meet Cecil McPhee. And our music to start comes from Paul Carrick.
Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me. Let there be peace on earth, the peace that was meant to be with God as our Father, brothers all are we. Let me walk with my brother in perfect harmony. Let peace begin with me. Let this be the moment now. With every step I take, let this be my solemn vow, to take each moment and live each moment in peace eternally. Let there be peace on earth, let it begin with me. Oh, let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me. Let there be peace on earth, the peace that was meant to be with God as our Father, brothers all are we. Let me walk with my brother in perfect harmony. Oh, let peace begin with me. Let this be the moment now. And with every step I take, let this be my solemn vow, to take each moment and live each moment in peace eternally. Let
Paul Carrick and Let There Be Peace on Earth. My guest this morning is someone whose very presence seems to radiate peace. Reverend Dr. D.D. Haynes served for over 10 years as minister of Trinity Methodist Church here in Douglas and other chapels in the east of the island. Now back in the United States, she works with the hospice movement in Minneapolis, where she is bereavement coordinator and supervisor of spiritual care and music therapy. She also likes to come back to the island once a year. She's here now and very kindly spared me some time to record this conversation. Dee Dee, good morning and welcome back to your island home.
Well, thank you ever so much. It is always a kind of homecoming to make this trek once a year, and hopefully we'll continue to do that.
We have some sunny weather and the start of Keels Week, so I hope you'll be able to enjoy some of those events. What I'd really like to do is ask you about your ministry in the United States. Tell us a little, Dee Dee, about what you're doing, please.
What I'm doing now is working within a hospice. So I'm the principal person to provide grief support for families and loved ones of patients who have died. And I supervise the spiritual caregivers, who are the chaplains, the music therapists who provide that kind of presence with people at end of life, and the massage therapists.
It's a wonderful opportunity, I should say challenging and a big job, but a wonderful opportunity to connect with people at a low moment when they sometimes don't always know where to go for the support that they need, or indeed what support they need.
I think that's so true. And part of what that kind of presence does is make a safe space for people to talk about all the things that they're holding inside. When we come to that time in our life, we're focusing on a lot of meaning making. What's important to me now? How do I want to be remembered? What are the things that will be the story of my life? And we also have a lot of things that are probably unreconciled, and being able to facilitate that for people, because it's always the work of the person, right? When you go and be present with somebody at that time in their life, it's never about you. It's always about them. And how can I be present in such a way that makes that kind of space where they can speak and be heard, where they can experience empathy without judgment, and really speak from their hearts?
Do you think that we live in such a busy world with so much distraction and pressure around us that we push away, while we're well and we're caught up in life, we push away any sense of looking at ourselves and thinking about ourselves until we come to a stop that's forced on us? And as you say, you're so right about saying there's a lot that's unresolved often, isn't there?
I think it's very human to lean into the rhythm of our lives. There's a kind of momentum about life that draws us out and keeps us distracted. It's one of the reasons why when we do a retreat, when you go away for a few days, you know, by about the third day, everyone in the group is thinking, whew, this is more than I planned for, right? Because when we go inward, it's hard for us to see ourselves and to see ourselves with compassion. We look at ourselves with a lot of judgment, and that makes it difficult. I've yet to encounter somebody who says, oh, I had a lovely time just thinking about my own life and going inward and, you know, contemplating the story of my life, and boy, I really like what I see. We don't, right? We're quite critical, and we don't have a lot of compassion for ourselves. And that we have to remember that the story that we tell ourselves about who we are in the world is always going to be the loudest voice that we hear. And so it's important that we're kind and compassionate when we're brushing our teeth at night and looking in the mirror and saying, what has my life been this day, or what's the story of me today? That we give ourselves some grace. If we didn't get everything done that we wanted to get done, that we say, I did my very best today and tomorrow I'll begin again, right? Because we go to sleep with that thought in our mind. If it's a long list of things that we didn't get accomplished, that's not a nice way to finish our day. But to be grateful for the things that we were allowed to engage with, and the things we did accomplish, or the things we did give ourselves to, and know that that's enough. And that we are enough.
We're not good at believing that we're enough. We put ourselves under a lot of pressure. We need to be more careful of ourselves, really, don't we?
We do. And I think part of that criticism comes from a culture that teaches us that we are valued by what we produce. Right. So people who sleep for 3 hours, we put them up on a pedestal and say, aren't they wonderful? How do they do that? Look at all these things they produce. Instead of understanding that our value comes from just being a human creature created in the image of God. And that's our truest, deepest value, just who we are. I think one of the ways that we can do that best for ourselves and to have that kind of understanding of other people is to have a genuine curiosity about somebody, right? And life in general. And not the kind of curiosity that, you know, I wonder what their salary is or how they've acquired these things, but to say, what is it like to be a human creature who is standing where they stand? So from my perspective, working in hospice, what is it like? What will I learn from this person about what it's like to be a human creature when I'm no longer able to get out of bed? What is it like when I have heard this news that my life is coming to an end, what will I learn from that person when I go and sit next to them about what it means to be a human creature in this world? Sometimes if I sit next to somebody's bed and maybe they're not verbal anymore, or they're already on their journey in such a way that they're no longer speaking aloud, talking to that person inside and talking about their hands and all of the things that these hands have done in a lifetime and how they will be remembered because their fingerprints will be upon the world.
Which is a beautiful thought. I think one of the saddest things is when you hear an obituary at a funeral and the person is talked about and you think, I wish I'd known that about them when they were alive. We realise we only know a little bit often of people's lives. We sometimes don't explore people's stories as much as we could, do we?
We don't. And I think part of that comes because our culture isn't very comfortable with silence, right? So if you go in and sit with somebody, especially if you're a clinician or a caregiver and you're going in, you feel like you have a job to do, right? That somehow I have to fill up all of this space with words, when in fact, probably the most meaningful thing you can do is to sit quietly with somebody and wait for them to tell their story and wait for them to feel that this is a safe space and this is somebody who really wants to know me. And that makes such a difference, doesn't it? And also recognizing, I think, that this is an exchange, a mutual exchange. Sometimes when I go to see a group of people, I will say at the beginning, I might have a lot of letters after my name, but everything that I have learned from people just like you. So I'm going to say in advance, thank you so much, because I know that when I leave here, I'll be taking more with me than I brought.
Coming to the work that you do with people who are at the end of their life, their families who are walking the journey with them, do you find that there's regret or guilt or feelings of failure in family that need to be brought out and need to be healed?
I think what I probably notice the most is that every family has something, right? Every family has some tension. Every family has somebody who's kind of on the outside, either by choice or something's happened. I think people die the way they live. So if they are fearful or they have disconnect with families or friends or community, that's probably going to be a part of their story as they make their way to what comes next as well. I don't think we have what I would say some kind of grand moment where everything becomes reconciled. I think those things stay with us. They're a part of who we are. And sometimes you're able to be present with somebody and just telling your story out loud is a healing thing in itself, right? So just having somebody say, these are the things I regret, or these are the things that I fear, and being able to say to them, you're loved, and that's what's going to be remembered. We're going to remember you when we gather together at a table and there's an empty chair. We're going to tell your story when new people are brought into this family by marriage or by birth. They're going to know who you are, and they're going to know we loved you.
Dee Dee, you are motivated by your deep faith, but you have a gentleness and an openness of approach to people. Is there deeper searching in people for a meaning, a connection, for something outside themselves?
I do think there is, yes. I think over the last few years, and even after the pandemic, you know, people experienced a lot of disconnect. So I really think our spiritual identity is about connection with ourselves, connection with our community, which also includes the landscape. So someplace here like the Isle of Man, that's just such a deep resource. And then something bigger. I think there's something human within us that craves that kind of connection.
A hunger for God, you feel that's there?
Yeah, I do. But one thing that I've learned is that I think it has to begin with connection with ourselves first. When I was a child and I learned about religious identity, which was different than a spiritual identity, I learned, you know, that it was kind of a top-down thing. Somehow if I was connected to God, all these other things would fall into place. And now I think I really have to be connected to myself before I can be connected to anyone else or anything else or something bigger or God.
Dee Dee, if somebody's listening to this and thinking, what this lady is saying makes a lot of sense to me, I want to be more connected with myself, what would you recommend would be the first step that they would take?
Boy, that's a great question. I think that there are lots of ways to nurture connection. I've been wrestling lately with the idea that loving your neighbor is good for your health and well-being, and that probably the best way to be connected then is to nurture empathy for yourself and for others, to practice being inside your body, to stop long enough from the world rhythm and actually feel yourself in your body, starting with your toes all the way up to the top of your head, to nurture relationships. And if you find that people are just a lot, right, I can't jump in that way, sit outside on your front step with an apple and eat it outside and taste and see that it is good.
Dee Dee, thank you very much indeed for being here. Thank you for talking to us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Speak, O Lord, as we come to you to receive the food of your holy word. Take your truth, plant it deep in us, shape and fashion us in your likeness, that the light of Christ might be seen today in our acts of love and our deeds of faith. Speak, O Lord, and fulfill in us all your purposes for your glory.
Keystones was a monthly series first broadcast here on Manx Radio in the 1980s. The presenter was Reverend David Bush, who visited the island's churches, exploring their history and their place in the community. So today, let's travel back 40 years to Colby Methodist Chapel, where David is in conversation with Cecil McPhee, who, at the time of this recording, had been an active Methodist local preacher for 60 years.
I've always been associated with Methodism from my youth up. In fact, my forebears go back in Colby since Methodism was introduced. I was a member of the Sunday school in the primitive section. That is the building across the way, and it's now closed. And in 1945, the two societies here, that was the Wesleyans and the primitives, they united and formed one Methodist society.
The word primitives. Now, can you tell us a little bit more about them?
Well, primitive at first was a nickname given to them because this section that were excommunicated, if you like, from the Wesleyan society, they were ridiculed and called primitives because they worshipped in the primitive methods of Wesley when he went out into the open air with his prayer meetings and on his horseback preaching at street corners and so on. So they were called primitives. The first primitive missionary came to the island and landed at Derby Haven in 1822, and he established the first society in Colby, primitive society in Colby. It was the first in the Isle of Man, and he made his manse in Ballycannell, which is a house just above the old Colby Mill Dam. Now, when the primitives first came here, they were invited by a woman, the name of Jane Cubbon, who lived on the east side of the river, and that house was the first meeting place of the primitives in the area, although the Wesleyans had been established before that, of course.
Where did worship take place before these buildings were built?
When Wesley came here in 1777, he already found a well-established church in Colby Village. the earliest meeting or preaching place in Calbe for the Wesleyan Society was the Cubbins of Calbe Moor, was the first meeting place of the Wesleyan Society.
Now, we're in the chapel here this morning. These seats, which are in a sloping plan, Cecil, either side of the pulpit, are they for the choir or for the children?
Now that you've mentioned these particular singing seats, as the Manx used to call them, they were brought down from the old church of the primitives, and the pulpit too came from the primitive side, so that when we had unity of buildings, there was a permanent memorial established as well by bringing the singing seats and the pulpit and arranging it in this way as a perpetual memory of those who had served Methodism and the Lord in the other building. So not only were we united as persons in a fellowship, but there is even in the furniture itself a symbolism of unity. Originally, this was just like a barn, and so was the other building across the way. I've got an old picture at home, probably the oldest, that shows these buildings, and it shows this building as just plain stonework, no plasterwork outside, no porch, and also the same is shown regarding the primitive side too. Now, one thing that was quite unique perhaps to a lot of Manx Methodist places, and that was the segregation of the sexes. The women would come in even with their family, and the men would go to the right and the women would go to the left. And I remember that happening here and in the other place. The men would come on the right side, the women on the left. And here was a long board along this wall here, and that contained a long row of pegs for the top hats of the men who sat on the right-hand side of the church.
Speak, O Lord, till your church is built and the earth is filled with your glory.
From the Manx Radio archives from 40 years ago, Cecil McPhee chatting with Reverend David Bush about the origins of Methodism in Calbe. Now, lots to tell you about on today's notice board, and we begin with a reminder about Praying the Keels Week that started yesterday. And there are daily events of talks and walks, different ways for us to explore the history and beauty of these remains of Christian chapels dating from the 8th century onwards. Leaflets are available in all our churches, or you can take a look at the website. For day-by-day programme details, go to prayingthekeels.org, and Keels is spelt K-E-E-I-L-L-S, and you'll find them on Facebook too. This year's theme is centred around Archibald Knox, who described himself as the humble servant of God in the ministry of the beautiful. Humility that Overcomes the World is the title of a talk to be given by Mark McCurtis this Tuesday, the 20th. Mark is a member of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship, and here he is to set the theme for the evening.
Essentially, everywhere you look, people are asking a very similar kind of question, and that is, what are we going to do to save the world? I mean, what are we going to do to bring help and healing to the world right now when we are up against some extraordinarily difficult circumstances? And to begin to try to provide an answer to this question, I'd like to turn to the Bible and the Gospel of John. This is a statement that Jesus made. He said, "In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." So I want to take some time to think through with you the significance of this statement, what Jesus was talking about, what this means for all of us, what this means for the communities that we live in, what this means for our world.
The talk by Mark McCurtis this Tuesday evening starts at 7 o'clock in the First Church of Christ Scientist on the corner of Hillary and Woodbourne Road here in Douglas. Admission is free, there'll be refreshments afterwards, and all are welcome. And now let's finish with a look at the rest of our notice board. This evening at 6:30, the Mariners Choir will be at Abbeylands. The preacher is Reverend Steve Ingruill, organist Mr. Andrew Smith, and soloist Mr. Mike Derber. Supper will follow the service, then there'll be community hymn singing. There is no 3 o'clock service in Abbeylands today. Tomorrow, Monday the 19th, the parish of St. George and All Saints in Douglas are resuming their very popular monthly community lunches. The theme of tomorrow's lunch is very topical. It's VE Day 80. Lunch will be served as usual in the parish hall of St. George and All Saints on Alexander Drive here in Douglas, tomorrow between noon and 1:30. The menu is Woolton pie with ham, followed by chilled white chocolate rice pudding with shortbread and tea or coffee. A vegetarian option will be available. There's no charge, but donations to help with costs are always welcome. The Talis Consort are in concert this week, and there are two chances for you to enjoy an evening of nighttime-inspired music and poetry with special guest Jackie Morrie Grace. Called Draw On, Sweet Night, the first concert is tomorrow evening, Monday the 19th, in St. Catherine's Church in Port Erin, and the same concert will be repeated on Friday the 23rd in St. Mary's Roman Catholic Co-Cathedral on Hill Street here in Douglas. Both concerts start at 7:30, and it's free admission to both. Manx Concert Brass will be in concert in the Cathedral in Peel on Wednesday, May the 21st. It starts at 8 o'clock. Admission is free, but donations would be welcome. Also on Wednesday evening, it's the annual Post Guild Concert in St John's Methodist Church Hall. That's this Wednesday evening at 7:30. £10 admission includes a generous country supper. Cleveland Medal winner Ruth Tickle and Sheffield Plate winner Parker Kissack will be on stage, plus lots of other Guild stars, and Gareth Moore is the accompanist. Musicale are in concert in Patrick Church on Friday the 23rd. We missed them at this year's Guild, so here's a lovely opportunity to enjoy their music. That's Patrick Church this coming Friday at 8 o'clock. On now to next Sunday, the 25th, when there's going to be a summer concert and cream tea with the Manx Ukulele Band in Dorby Schoolrooms. This is next Sunday, the 25th, starting at 2:30, and it's part of Dorby Church's intensive campaign to raise £7,000 between now and the middle of June. If they can do this, the Church of England will match fund with a Give to Go Green grant to support a maintenance programme for a more sustainable building. But alongside that, it's going to be a great afternoon out, with a concert by the ukulele band lasting approximately 45 minutes, followed by a delicious proper afternoon tea in the schoolrooms. Everyone's welcome. If you're coming as a party, please book as a group so that you can all sit together. Admission is £10 per person, and you can book by contacting Gilly on 844031 and let us know if you're needing a gluten-free option. Numbers are restricted, so please book early. 844031. And finally, also next Sunday the 25th, the Mariners Choir will be at the Howe Methodist Chapel in Port St Mary. The service is at 6:30 as usual, and Mr Gareth Moore will preach. There'll be supper and community hymn singing afterwards, and a warm welcome for all. And that's all for now, but I'll be back tonight at 9, opening the virtual lounge door and inviting you to join me for easy listening music and your requests and dedications. I'd love you to join me if you can. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week. And a very good morning.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.